from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto of chapter 9, entitled The Passing Away of Bhishmadeva, text 44. Sampadyamanam Bhagyaya
Sampadyamanam Bhagyaya
Bhismam Brahmani Niskale
Bhismam Brahmani Niskale
Sarve Babu Vastetusnim
Sarve Babu Vastetusnim
Vayam Shivani Natyaye
Vayam Shivani Natyaye
Sampadyamanam
Sampadyamanam
Having merged into
Agyaya,
after knowing this,
Bhismam,
about Sri Bhishmadeva,
Brahmani,
into the Supreme Absolute,
Niskale,
unlimited,
Sarve,
all present. Bhavute,
All of them became.
Tasmin, silent.
Vayam Siva, like birds.
Dina Atyaye, at the end of the day. Translation. Knowing that Bhishmadeva had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent, like birds, at the end of the day. To enter into or to become merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute means to enter the original home of the living being. The living beings are all component parts and parcel of the Absolute Personality of God, and ever they're eternally related with Him as the servitor and the served. The Lord is served by all His parts and parcels, as the complete machine is served by its parts and parcels. Any part of the machine removed from the whole is no longer important. Similarly, any part and parcel of the Absolute detached from the service of the Lord is useless. The living beings who are in the material world are all disintegrated parts and parcels of the Supreme Whole. They are no longer as important as the original parts and parcels. There are, however, more integrated living beings who are eternally liberated. The material energy of the Lord, called Durga Shakti, or the superintendent of the prison house, takes charge of the disintegrated parts and parcels, and thus they undergo a conditional life under the laws of material nature. When the living being becomes conscious of this fact, he tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and thus the spiritual urge of the living beings. This spiritual urge is called Brahma Jigyasa, or inquiry about Brahman. Principally, this Brahma Yigyasa is successful by knowledge, renunciation, and devotional service to the Lord. Gyan or knowledge means knowledge of everything, Brahman, the Supreme. Renunciation means detachment of material affection. And devotional service is the revival by practice of the original position of the living being. The successful living beings who are eligible to enter into the realm of the Absolute are called the Jnanis, the Yogis, and the Bhaktis. The Jnanis and Yogis enter into the impersonal rays of the Supreme, but the Bhaktis enter into the spiritual planets known as Vaikunthas. In these spiritual planets, the Supreme Lord as the Lion predominates, and the healthy, unconditioned living beings live there by rendering loving service to the Lord in the capacity of servant, friend, parents, and fiancé. There, the unconditioned living beings enjoy life in full freedom with the Lord, whereas the impersonalist jnanis and yogis enter into the impersonal, glowing effulgence of the Vaikuntha planet. The Vaikuntha planets are all self-illuminating like the sun, and the rays of the Vaikuntha planets are called the Brahma Jyoti. The Brahma Jyoti is spread unlimitedly, and the material world is but a covered portion of an insignificant part of the same Brahma Jyoti. This covering is temporary, and therefore it is a sort of illusion. Bhishmadeva is a pure devotee of the Lord, entered the spiritual realm in one of the Vaikuntha planets, where the Lord, in his eternal form of Parthasarathi, predominates over the unconditioned living beings who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. The love and affection which bind the Lord and devotee are exhibited in the case of Bhishmadeva. Bhishmadeva never forgot the Lord in his transcendental feature. as the Parthasarathi. And the Lord was present personally before Bhishmadeva while he was passing to the transcendental world. That is the highest perfection of life. So it mentions here that Bhishmadeva entered or merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute. So one who reads such a thing may give so many interpretations. One may say, oh, he merged into Brahman. It is clear. That is what happened to Bhishmadeva. But Srila Prabhupada in his purport gives an explanation. And he says that successful living beings who are eligible to enter into the realm of the Absolute are called the Jnanis, the Yogis, and the Mantras. The Jnanis and Yogis enter into the impersonal rays of the Supreme, but the Bhaktas enter into the spiritual planets known as the Vaikunthas. So that is the point, that Bhishmadeva was a Bhakta, a devotee. He was not a Jnani, he was not a Yogi. So when it is described that Bhishmadeva entered into eternity, it cannot be that he entered into Brahman, because yam yam vāpi svaram bhāvam charati antakare ram tam tam eva iti kuntiya sādhata bhāva bhāvitaḥ. That according to the state of consciousness that one has, one will attain, at the time of death, one will attain a next destination. So Bhishmadeva, because he was completely absorbed in Krishna, particularly on the battlefield, because Bhishmadeva was such a warrior. It is for that reason, and that reason only, that Bhishmadeva was in the battle of Kurukshetra, on the opposing side. He was opposing Krishna. So how is it possible that a devotee was opposing Krishna? But it said that Bhishmadeva had that vira ras, that relationship of chivalry. And therefore he had to be on the opposing side, but Krishna said he would not fight. But then circumstantially it all came about that Duryodhana challenged Bhishma, and saying, you're not really fighting. Yeah, you could kill all these Pandavas, but you're not really fighting. And then Duryodhana just said it with so much intensity that Bhishma said, all right, tomorrow I will kill the Pandavas. Here are 5 arrows, and with these 5 arrows I will call the 5 Pandavas. So Duryodhana was thinking, there are demigods here, there are all kinds of personalities here who actually are witnessing what's going on. And, you know, someone might come in the night trying to take away these 5 arrows. And if they beg from Bhishma, he might just give, because he's so dharmic that he'll just sacrifice and give. But me, I will never give those arrows. No way, no matter who comes, right? So therefore, grandfather, can I keep these 5 arrows? And in this way, everything seemed to be perfect. But of course, Krishna is the supreme witness. There are so many witnesses, 13 witnesses, the demigods, the day, the night, the earth, the sky, and the demigods, and also Paramatma. And the most important, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is witnessing everything. So in this way, Krishna had witnessed everything. And Krishna said that evening after the battle to Arjuna, tomorrow you are finished. So Arjuna said, oh, tomorrow I'll be finished. What is happening? I said, yes, tomorrow you'll be finished. And then he told the story. Bhishmadeva has vowed has vowed that he will kill the five palaces he has these five arrows. But now we should go to the tent of Duryodhana. And remember how when you were all in exile, when you were all in exile in the forest, that in the final year something transpired. At that time, Karna came to Duryodhana. And Karna said, "So, now, my dear Duryodhana, we have been ruling for 12 years, and see how we became established. Oh, see how glorious we have become in these 12 years." "Yes," Duryodhana says, "yes, my dear Karna, we have done well." "Well," Karna said, "recently my spies have told me where the Pandavas are hiding in the forest. And I've got this idea, and I'm sure you're going to like it. You know, let's go. Let's go and let's show off our opulence to rub salt in the wound. Let's go to the Pandavas." Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Karna, you're a genius. Absolutely. "Oh, yes, let's go." And they went, and they brought all the queens on elephants, and they came with a huge army and going to that forest. Now, nearby to that forest, there was a lake. And just as they passed that lake, this Gandharva appears. And the Gandharva says, "Stop. Stop. Stop." You know, Duryodhana says, "Stop. You know what I mean? Who can say stop to me? I mean, do you see that I'm coming here with an army, with elephants and everything, and you say stop to me? Who are you to tell me to stop?" Said, "I am the representative of the king of the Gandharvas. No one can pass here. Return." And Duryodhana said, "Get out of my way." You know. Anyway, it came to a terrible fight. The Gandharvas were fighting with the army of the Kauravas, and it just, these Gandharvas are very powerful, and it really started to become problematic, and even Karna had to run for his life. And that was the situation. Then these Gandharvas, who can fly, were lifting up Duryodhana into the sky. Well, just at that moment, right? Just a bit before, you know, Bhima was saying, I mean, like, you know, look at this, you know what I mean? These Gandharvas, they're just fixing up Duryodhana. And they're doing us a real favor, I tell you that. Look at that, you know, he's getting it. Great God, guys. And Duryodhana was getting it, and Bhishma was cheering on the side. And then Yudhisthira said, "No, Bhima." He said, "Amongst us, there are Kurus and Pandavas. But for the world, we are one. We are one family. We are all Kurus. And if someone attacks our family, we must act. And we must go save him." All the other four Pandavas said, "Save Duryodhana?" And Yudhisthira said, "Yes, we must go save Duryodhana." "No." And then he said, "Okay, he's the elder brother. Oh my God, we gotta go. Who could ever imagine that this day would come? Better go save Duryodhana." So they're getting ready to go, and then Yudhisthira says, "Yes, we will go, but I cannot go because I have to finish this sacrifice." That was really too much. Anyway, they went. And when they came there, the Gandharvas were just taking Yudhisthira up, and taking Duryodhana up into the sky. Then Arjuna started shooting arrows so fast, one after the other, that the arrows created a net in the sky. So the Gandharvas couldn't get through. So that was it. So then Duryodhana held up this arrow and said, "Put him down. Put him down, right arrow." Well, what could they do, you know? They had to put him down. And then, the Gandharva said, "But we only tried to help you." So, "No, you know, release him. He's our family member." So anyway, so that happened then. And then, he was Duryodhana. Arjuna, of all, had saved his life. What he was going to do now? But according to etiquette and Kshatriya Dharma, if someone saves your life, you owed him a favor. So Duryodhana came walking towards Arjuna. He never looked in his eyes. He just looked down at the ground. And he said, "Okay, Arjuna, you saved my life. What boon would you like? If you want, I'll give you the entire earth." "No." Arjuna said, "That's okay. You know, I don't want any boon now. I'll take it later." And that was it. And then Duryodhana went into the forest. You know, and he was so ashamed. He went into the forest to give up his life. And he was sitting there fasting, waiting for death to come. But then he had a vision. And all the asuras appeared before him. And they said, "We have done," the daityas, the demons. He said, "We have done a great puja." So not the demons living on earth, but living on elsewhere in the universe. And the demons said, "We have done a puja to defeat the demigods. And the purpose of this puja has been fulfilled in the appearance of yourself. And you are assisted by Narakasura, who appeared as Karna. And in this way, you will certainly be victorious. Do not give up your life." Well, then, do you know, sir? Okay. Maybe then I shouldn't give up my life, and maybe then, you know, should just go back and reassemble the army, and I'll get them later. I'll surely be victorious. In this way, this is what transpired. And now, so much time later, that night came where Arjuna came to the tent of Duryodhana. Then Duryodhana said, "Arjuna, you have come. Please be seated. You know, what would you like to eat or drink? You know, be my guest. I'm so glad that you have come. What can I do for you?" And then Arjuna says, "Remember that boon?" "Sure. What would you like? You want the kingdom without a fight?" No. Arjuna says, "That's okay. Just give me those 5 arrows." That was it. And then the next day, when Bhishma heard this, Bhishma knew it was Krishna. And he said, "This Krishna, he has cheated me. He made me break my vow. I took a vow that I would kill the 5 Pandavas, and he made me break that vow. Now, he took a vow that he will not fight. But tomorrow, I will fight in such a way that if he doesn't break his vow, then Arjuna is finished." And so it happened. Bhishma was just fighting. I mean, it was just inconceivable. No one had seen anything like that. Arjuna had no chance. He was losing, and Krishna could be his chariot driver or not. It wouldn't help. Bhishma was going to kill him anyway. And at that point, Krishna got hit by arrows. Krishna was covered in dust from the battlefield. And there were wounds on Krishna's body, which just like red in color with gray dust. And then Krishna suddenly stood up and ran up on the battlefield and grabbed a wheel that had broken from a chariot and just stormed with that wheel at Bhishma. And he would have killed him. Then Bhishma just surrendered. This was the This was the Krishna. This was the Krishna that Bhishma wanted to see. Krishna in that chivalrous fighting mood. And he had forced him to break his vow. And therefore, who was victorious? Bhishma was victorious. It was his moment of glory and victory. Oh, yes. And this picture, it was just carved into Bhishma's memory. That picture he could never forget. That was the moment. You know, that was his worshipable deity coming with that view. I defeated you. That was the spirit. Right? And Krishna, then, as soon as he saw the expression on the face of Bhishmadev, I defeated you immediately. He dropped that wheel. Okay. Oops, yeah. Okay, yeah. I broke my vow. Oops. You defeated me. They both know. They both know. So now, at the end, that same Krishna came when Bhishma was leaving his body. He personally came. That's how great a devotee Bhishmadev was. He had purchased Krishna with his devotional service, his whole life, just dedicated in service to Krishna. Always put the principles of Dharma before, in any condition of life. One day we call that story of his father, Maharaj Santanu, who was depressed. He said, "Dad, what's happening? You know, what's wrong with you?" "I'm depressed." "Why? Don't be depressed, you know, you got a kingdom." "Yes, but you know, I want this new queen, a young one." "There are many, you know." No, "there's a particular one I want. But there's a problem. She is the daughter of a fisherman." "Well, that's all right. In the scripture it is said that, you know, one can take good instruction from a fool. One can take nectar from poison, and one can take a good wife from a bad family." "So there is scriptural, and so it's all right." He says, "No, that's not the issue. It's not a scriptural issue. It's her father. The man is impossible." Bhishma said, "Don't worry about that. I'll talk to him. I'll work it out." But indeed, that father, that fisherman, my God, he was an impossible character. No, really. And Bhishma went there and said, "So, my father, you are very fortunate, O fisherman. My father, the king, Maharaj Santanu, who lives in great wealth and opulence, he is ready to marry your daughter. All wealth and auspiciousness will come upon you. So, you know, let this marriage come to pass." "No, no. No," the fisherman said, "no, it won't be possible. It won't be possible." "No, but why?" Bhishma said. "Because it will not be possible to meet my demands." "No, no. Say it. What are your demands?" "I want the son of my daughter to become king of the world." Bhishma said, "That is no problem at all, no problem. I happen to be the heir to the throne, so I'll step down, and then he can have it. He can have it." "And that way?" "No, no, no," the fisherman said, "no, it will not work. No, it's not going to work. No, this marriage will not come to pass." "No, but what is it now? I gave you everything you wanted. I even gave you the kingdom. What more do you want, foolish old man? You know, see the advantage of your daughter. Don't act against the interest of your daughter." He says, "No, this marriage will not come to pass, because when the son of my daughter becomes king, God, then your son will become envious of him, and he will kill him." and then my daughter will be unhappy. He said, no, this marriage will not come to pass. Then Bhishma said, all right. I will never get married. I will remain celibate throughout my life. And the demigods assembled in the sky. And the demigods, they just called out the Brihadvrata, the great vow. And they showered flower petals on Vishwade. And in this way, they just, you know, Bhishma stood there. That was glorious, Bhishma there. So, in this way, the external circumstances are not really relevant. Vishwadeva was externally living with the enemy of Krishna. Krishna was on the other side. When Krishna went there to Duryodhana before the battle of Kurukshetra, trying to avoid the war, Duryodhana heard that Krishna is coming. So Duryodhana was thinking, all right, quickly, make this amazing palace. Right? So they worked really hard to make this amazing palace and really decked out super nice. And then as Krishna arrived, then Duryodhana said, oh, welcome, Krishna. Oh, welcome. Please. Why have you come? Please be our guest. He said, we have made a facility for you. There's this beautiful, glittering palace fully decked out. Nice place for you to stay. Just a gift for you. But Krishna said, no. I will never stay there. I will never stay in a place which belongs to one who is envious of the Pandavas. Because they are fully devoted towards me. And then he left. And he went to stay in the house of Vidura, who was a sudra, a dasiputra, right? Son of the king, but, you know, of a maidservant, the king and the maidservant. Those things were going on, and it wasn't like shame on the king. It was accepted, but at the same time, such sons were also allowed to live at the court, and nobody was, like, making a big issue about it. But, you know, they had no rights to the throne or anything like that. Dasiputras, sons of a maidservant. So Vidura was like that. And then Krishna went to stay in the house of Vidura, right, who was so shocked because he had totally not expected it, and Vidura never knew it. He said, but I have nothing to eat. Krishna said, oh, just give me some fruits. And then Vidura became so ecstatic that all they had was some bananas, and they, instead of offering the bananas, he offered the peels. And Krishna ate the peels because they were offered with love and devotion. So Krishna is just eating banana peels. That's nice stories, right? I mean, these are not new stories, but it's just so nice that Krishna just eats banana peels. I mean, I really appreciate that. He really takes the love, and that point is made so clear. He doesn't care for the particular material quality, you know? Banana peels, all right. If you offer it with love, then I'll eat banana peels, no problem. Yeah. So if you ever ate banana peels, but you know, let's see, I'll offer them to you with lots of love. See if you're going to eat them. So this is Mahajanayinikatasapam, that we follow the path of the Mahajans, of these great personalities. And the Bhagavatam has these Mahajans, these great personalities. Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu. Swayambhu is the self-born Lord Brahma, who just appeared on the lotus flower. And then Narada appeared from the mind of Lord Brahma. Shambhu, Lord Shiva, appeared from the forehead, and then of Lord Brahma. And then we get Kumaro Kapilo Manu, the four Kumaras, the four sons of Brahma, who didn't want to to follow the order of their father to get married, and therefore they decided to stay 5 years old. Now that's a good tip. If you want to be a brahmachari, stay 5 years old. And that helps. Boys. You think about that. Anyway, the four Kumaras, Kumaro, Kapilo Manu, and Kapila, who was instructing his mother in transcendental knowledge and fulfilling the duties of a son in that way, delivering her after her husband took sannyas. And the mother was naturally inclined towards her son. Naturally, she was ready to take shelter of him. So in this way, the Mahajans show the path and show how society works. Manu, 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 her transcendental knowledge in the cyclic succession. Manu was in that way just repeating what he had heard. And Ivam Parampra Kaptam Ivam Rajasyu Vitu. So he knew what was wrong, what was right, on the strength of Parampara. And thus, Manu is the example. Praladu Janaku Bhishmo. Prahlad. Well, what can we say about Prahlad? Prahlad was just, he was 5 years old, which is kind of young, and at that age, you kind of, many children of five are quickly scared, It doesn't take much, I just have to walk around the corner and they run away, I don't even have to say, ooh, what to say? Actually, some people, in some Indian families, when the Swami comes to the house, they say, oh, he's going to take you. He's going to take you. They say, and then the children start crying. Thanks a lot, That was really nice of you. Anyway, so, Prahlad. Prahlad was not intimidated by nothing. Not by a pit of snake, not by boiling oil, right? And we're going to dip him like a pakora in boiling oil, which is the stage where, some of us might start screaming, But he was just simply chanting. Now, okay, if you throw me in a pit of snakes, I will also chant. I guarantee you. Because once in Australia, I flew on a plane which is known as the Cigar, right? And it was a tiny six-seater, and it was bad weather, and the way the thing was behaving, I tell you, on that flight, I chanted 16 rounds in 1 hour. I've never been able to do that before or after, but as I was in my seat, I was going, I was dead scared and chanting. And that's how I would be chanting in a pit filled with snakes. But not with love, not totally relaxed, like Prahlad. So, whenever we get like all worked up about something, all an anxiety, then Prahlad. Prahlad, 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 yes, he's there. Just Prahlad. It's just amazing. Here I'm in the Kasipu. No problem. Prahlad. It's quite... Whatever will happen to me, my Lord will surely protect me. Well, I don't have to worry. Not from I'll survive, but no. Wherever I will go, if I die and I'll go somewhere else, my Lord will not forsake me. That faith, you know, Prahlad. Prahlado, Janako, Janakwa, Maharaj, Janak, what can we say? Sita Devi herself became his daughter. That says enough, you know. We understand that if you get a great exalted daughter, then there must be something in you also. This is called Amoghavirya. Amoghavirya means that the spotlessness, the spotless potency, is something continuing from one generation to the next. So just seeing Sita told something about the character of Maharaj Janak, who was a great saintly devotee of the Lord. Balir Vayasaki Vayam Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj, the other day, I forgot where, but I gave a lecture about Bali Maharaj, and we know that Vamana Dev came and with three steps of land, three steps took away all the land, right? Of the whole universe, or two steps actually, and so on. And because Bali had promised three steps and he couldn't fulfill, then Vamana arrested him. And what he did, he tied him up in this snake, this serpent, and this snake started to strangle him. So he was just suffocating in the snake, and he was hanging in the snake. He couldn't breathe. He was choking. He turned completely green. He was hanging in that snake, and Vamana Dev just let him hang, right, for a long, long time. And you know, and this is what Bali Maharaj got. Although his spiritual master told him, don't give these three steps of land. He is Vishnu. Oh, is he Vishnu? Yes, he will take everything with two steps, then what will you do? No, he's Vishnu, then I must give. And for doing that, right, well, what did he get? He got strangled by his snake. Well, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Lord. That was very nice of you. And then, finally Lord Brahma comes and says, as an elder, and says, because he's, Vamana is known as Upendra, the younger brother of Indra, the son of Kasyapa and Aditi, and therefore he counts as one of the Devas. So, then, Lord Brahma is the grandfather, right? So grandfather comes. You know, grandfather comes and says, all right, young man, now it's enough. It's enough. Let him go. Vamana was still not letting him go. Then his mother came, and his mother says, let him go. Ah, come on, Mom. I'm just playing. Just having some fun. And then, you know, let him go. Okay, snake. Let him go. So then finally, they let Bali Maharaj go. But Bali Maharaj was not like, you know, you traitor, you rat. I gave you everything and look what you did to me. You had me bound up by this snake. I'll get you back. No, Bali Maharaj accepted that all along, never lost his faith. Mahajan, even all the adverse conditions came, never became angry with the Lord, never for a moment felt like, oh, now it's too much, you know what I mean? What kind of God is this? You know, how can this happen? After the Second World War, a lot of people stopped being religious. A lot of people. On either side. This is how can such tragedies happen in the world? And what was the Second World War compared to Kurukshetra, where 640 million people were killed in 18 days? Yeah, but Bali Maharaj, even adverse conditions could not affect his faith. Therefore, Bali Maharaj is the Mahaja, not just because he gave everything to the Lord, even against advice of his superior. No. The greatest thing was that Bali Maharaj, even after having been strangled by the snake, still, even in great adversity, his faith never broke. Mahajan, Mahajan, Mahajan. Vyasaki. Vyasaki sings very nice. No, no. Not that Vyasaki. The other Vyasaki. Sukadev Goswami. The son of Vyas. Who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. Who was not interested in anything else. Even in full blooming youth, Sukadev Goswami was so transcendental that he didn't come out of the womb. And when he finally came out of the womb, then he was 16 years old. It was a bit uncomfortable for his mother. But anyway, he came out as a full blown youth of 16 years old and didn't even bother to put on clothes. He just left like that, walking naked through the world. And he walked through a forest. And in that forest, it happened to be so that on that day, some young girls were bathing in the forest, and they were just among girls, and they had put their clothes on the bank of a pond, and they were just getting ready to bathe. And then this naked young boy, you know, like a young demigod, comes just right there. And what happened? The girls, you know, could have done two things, right? One is they could have sort of invited him over. Oh, hi, how are you? What are you doing all alone? And this negative words, that's one thing that could have happened. And that's not what happened. Another thing that could have happened, the girls could have gone like, and just sort of jump up to the neck in the water. That also didn't happen. Because the girls could see, he's completely innocent. There is not a lusty thought in his mind. And they didn't even bother to cover themselves. He just walked past, and he was completely absorbed in his own Krishna consciousness. And they could see, he's not interested in this world. And that was Sukadev Goswami. Not interested in this world. Not at all. Therefore it is said that it is Sukadev who has one foot in the material world and one foot in the spiritual world. He is already in the spiritual world. Although he's here, in consciousness he's in the spiritual world. Mahajan, Mahajan. This is what we should be. We are in these material bodies, but internally we are in the spiritual world. And this is our meditation, and this, okay, it takes for us a sadhana to develop that. You can't just develop that overnight, just like that. It takes a sadhana, we have to practice it. We are first chanting Hare Krishna, first initiation, then we get the second initiation. And in the second initiation, in the Gayatri mantras, this meditation begins. That we are actually beginning to think of, no, it's not about Krishna. Oh Lord, please help me. Oh Lord, save me. Oh Lord, make it happen. Oh Lord, my life is so hard. Oh Lord, where are you now? Oh Lord, make sure no one comes into the door. Oh Lord, the unwanted ones, only the wanted ones. Oh Lord, and so on. All praying for material benefits, no. Just now that I'm beginning to know the Lord a little better at the second initiation, now let me pray that I may serve the Lord in His world. You know what I mean? He has his own world where he performs his own pleasure pastimes. May I serve the Lord in this world. And thus the meditation begins, and one takes a first step in the direction of becoming a resident of the spiritual world. But Sukadev Goswami was such a resident of the spiritual world, completely. Mahajan, Mahajan, Baliya Vyasaki, Vayam. And in this way, these Mahajans are just amazing personalities. And these Mahajans are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. See? The Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us the life and the activities of these Mahajans. And their lives are the source of our inspiration. Because against the odds, they went forward. Yeah, we have a whole list. Well, I would surrender, but here's my legitimate list. It's legit. Legitimate list of why I can't. Not really. First of all, I was born in the wrong place at the wrong date, you know, and there were the wrong stars in the sky. But that's the first thing. Second thing is, you know, my father. Okay, that's enough. I mean, you know, I won't even start about it. Third thing is my mother. And the fourth thing is my brother. And the fifth thing is my sister. The sixth thing is my auntie, uncle, and everybody else. The seventh thing, the town where I grew up. And the eighth thing is the part of town where I grew up. The ninth thing is, you know, is the school where I went to. Okay, that too. Then, you know, just the tenth thing is the direction of the time. Each time has a different direction. It's just all the people around me started doing all these things, and then innocently, although I'm an angel by nature, what could I do? I also got swept up. I had no chance. No chance. And a whole long list of sob story, soap opera. Me and my excuse. Yes. And in this way, we couldn't do. But then, each of these Mahajans defeats our excuses. God is not just. Otherwise, how could all that misery have come upon me? How could this have happened to me? You know? That's what I was thinking when I was a kid and our hamster died and we had a ceremonial funeral in the garden. It was a big thing. How could such injustice happen to me? But the Mahajans go forward. They go forward. Nothing can deter them. They simply go forward in service to Krishna. So how nice that we have these Mahajans. How nice that we have this Srimad Bhagavatam. How nice that we have Bhishmadev. Because Bhishmadev defeats my mind. You know, my mind, which is the source of a million excuses, Bhishmadev defeats it. So that's why today we're very fortunate that we are reading this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada particularly liked this chapter about the passing away of Bhishmadev and was remembering how glorious Bhishmadev died on the battlefield, how Bhishmadev was just always remembering Krishna. So anyway, those are some reflections this morning. I took enough time to finish the story. So. So any questions or comments? Yes.
Yes, I have a comment about we learn from this discussion from Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj never break his face to Krishna.
Yeah.
So we can't serve two master. We must hate one and love another one.
Yeah.
I mean, Bali Maharaj was very sincere in spiritual world. That's my comments.
Yeah, you're right. We can't serve two masters. Now the problem is that for a long time we have thought that we are master. You know, I am master. Right. And I'll show you guys. You know, I'll show you how I am superior. Yes. I may not look it, you know, but like, you know, when the glasses go off and Clark Kent throws him to the side, Superman comes out. I am superior. And even Krypton is not going to get me. So, what to say, you know. So this Superman syndrome is living deeply within all of us, right? And I am master. And then we come to Krishna consciousness. But the problem is that although we start to serve Krishna, we do serve two masters. We still serve ourselves also. And that is the problem, as you say, because we can't serve two masters. So Pali Maharaj showed that. As you rightly commented, you can't serve two masters, only Krishna. Other question? Yes?
In terms of great personalities, how do we understand the way they define, for example, Mahajans? Is that based
Mahajans?
On Mahajans?
Mahajans.
Is that based on the being like in scripture as opposed to someone like a Goswami or a Paramahamsa?
The reason why these personalities are described as Mahajans, are identified as the 12 Mahajans, is that, first of all, the verse is coming in Vedic scriptures of the 12 Mahajans. So it means we're dealing with personalities of ancient times. Because, you know, they first had to live and then there had to be a verse about them, and still there had to be time to put it in the Vedic literature. So there are many Mahajans, obviously. Mahajan literally means great personality. Maha is great and Jan means personality. Great personality. So there are many. Obviously there were more than these 12. Arjuna was also a Mahajan. And the Pandavas in their own way also. But because these personalities especially did such extraordinary things, And such issues came up in their life, the scriptures identified them and said, okay, these 12, right, just focus on them. I mean, you know, so we can make some sort of statement like, you know, the 12 Mahajans, including all and not limited by, right? Not limited. There are more Mahajans, many more. And the qualities of the Mahajans are described. The Bhagavad Gita, for example, in the 13th chapter is describing qualities. The 16th chapter is describing qualities of godly men. Right? But we're not talking just godly men, just like Hanuman and the spider. You know, we're not talking just the spider, we're talking Hanuman. Right? Both were working on going to Lanka. And the spider was throwing crumbs on the bridge, and Hanuman said, "Hey, spider, get out of my way. Can't you see I'm doing some work here? You know, I'm building a bridge, you know. I mean, you know, what are your crumbs gonna do? You know, just get out of my way." No, Hanuman. He's working with all his might, and you're working with all his might. From my perspective, your service is equal. That's okay, but still with crumbs, it would have taken a long time for that spider to finish that bridge. And Hanuman, there was no time to lose, right? Sita would have been an old lady by then, you know? So it was time to hurry up. So then Hanuman, with his mountains, made the bridge quickly. So still, we're remembering Hanuman more than the spider. So great devotees that have performed great, great things, they are the Mahajans. So the 6+1s are also Mahajans. Prabhupada is also a Mahajan. Because we recognize Prabhupada as even something more extraordinary, as Shakti Adesh Avatar, especially a power personality, to do what is done only once in a day of Brahma. Once in a day of Brahma, Krishna appears. After that, in the Kali Yuga, after that, Dwapara Yuga, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears once in a day of Brahma. And in this cycle of 1,000 Mahayugas, of 1,000 Mahayugas, only once Krishna consciousness is taken from east to west, and Prabhupada did it. So, it's quite special. That makes him a Shakti Avesh avatar, one who is empowered to do a very special work for the Supreme Lord, of great significance, even more so than a Mahajan, Shakti Avesh. So different titles are given to different personalities. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Chakravarti means one whose influence spreads over the entire world. Chakravarti. Right? Sarvabhoma, whose knowledge is known in the entire world. Now, that's what Sarvabhoma. Sarvabhoma is whose knowledge spreads over the entire world. And Chakravarti, who has a great circle of influence. So that's the proper translation. So like that, the acharyas are given titles. And we can understand their greatness. Yes.
That accepted some social etiquette, like naming various classes of men by different names. Like, for example, Shudras are called, and as far as I remember, Vaishyas are called Kakuja, and Kshatriyas, I think, Maharaj, and Brahmans, Pandits, or something like that. So why
I remember it a little different. And I remember it quite well because in Durban I just listened to it. To a lecture just about a week ago, where Prabhupada was saying, and Prabhupada in the lecture said, the Vaishya is Mahajan, the Kshatriya is Thakur, and the Brahmana is Maharaj. The Sudra, Prabhupada didn't say it, but in India they know the Sudras as Chaudhri. You know, so if someone has the name Chaudhri, then you know, you know, Mahajan, you know. Thakur. I noticed Thakur also because I used to stay in the house of the king of Makrana, and the whole village would call him Thakur. They'd all come Thakur. And then Pandit Maharaj or Pandit. Yeah, these titles are also given, you know, to give some recognition. So that's Vedic culture. Everyone is recognized. Yeah, it's different. It's the glorification culture. See, we are living in the cut down culture. You know, it's like I mean, look at that guy. He's too fat. You know, look at it. You know, gosh. You know, he has no muscle. You know, look at it. You know what I mean? He's got a long neck like a giraffe. We'll find something, fun thing. You know, 18 years old and already gray. Yeah? Yeah. And I mean, old man before his time. Just whatever we can find to pull somebody down, that is our culture, because there's so much envy in the culture. So really, culture is the opposite. not envious. Therefore, giving credit to everyone. And therefore these titles, sir, were freely given. Okay, you're the last one. This is my breakfast class call.
I read the Chaitanya Charitamrita class of Prabhupada, and he was also talking about that. And that particular one, he mentioned that the sutras they call Mahajan, because if you call them sutra, they become angry.
Okay. There you go. So, maybe you heard the same lecture. I heard the other one. But I think generally it's Mahajan that's given to the Vaishnavas, although it was, of course, you know, Gandhi who started this whole thing of like the Mahajans, right? Not for the sutras, for the scheduled castes, for the outcasts, right? For those who were like not even in Varnashram, the sweepers and all those, and even sutras, the outcasts. They do things, you know, they roast pigs in the street. They just like, you know, the pigs are lying and sleeping at the side of the road. They attack them with some bricks and knock them on the head. And then they put the pig on a wood fire on the middle of the road. You can see in Vrindavan, there's a corner, because in Vrindavan, only near the, there's one mosque, and next to the mosque there is a small butcher for the Muslims. But nowhere else is a butcher's allowed in Vrindavan. So, but the sweepers are allowed to keep pigs, and they just do it themselves, and just roast it in the street. And I've seen, as I went with the rickshaw to the bus stand, you know, Vrindavan bus stand, and I saw the pigs being roasted in the road. Haribo! Haribo! There you go. So Gandhi started to call them Mahajans. Great, great personalities. Just to sort of... He wanted to be all-inclusive. He had this whole thing about all-inclusiveness. Everyone. You know, which is a greatness in the heart, you know. So in that way we can appreciate. Didn't work out in the end. At the end, Muslims, Hindus started to divide, and then and there was like fighting. So much fighting was going on between Muslims and Hindus. And Gandhi went on this terrible fast and almost died, and then eventually the fighting stopped. And then he went to Calcutta, where the fighting was very hot, and he went to stay in the house of a Muslim. Then there was a riot. And eventually, he got shot. Anyway, the Mahajans. The 12 Mahajans. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. The Mahajans ki jaya. And the Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jaya.